Well, I'll call the Monday, November 4th meeting of the Community Development Committee together, and it looks like both of our members are in attendance. So that deals the roll call. First item is approval of minutes from the August 5th, 2019 meeting. Any comments?
Nope.
Okay. Deemed approved as written?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're approved. So now's the time for public comment. If there are any items that are not on the agenda that anybody would like to speak to, now's the time. Okay, we'll have time for comment for the agenda items as well. Okay, the first item is an adjustment request for 9466 Henderson Way. And it's the request is for approval to decrease the minimum interior side yard setback from 11.8 feet or to 8.85 feet for two solid roof patio covers. Both are less than 15 feet in height. Is there a staff report?
Basically, that's it. It's under authority, it's less than a 25% deviance. So, in fact, I could approve it administratively, but we have to announce it publicly, and since the CDC's meeting, it's appropriate. And we have the owner here and is prepared to speak to it, et cetera. Staff are recommending approval.
Okay.
We have approval letters from both the surrounding neighborhoods on both sides. I have signed off and supported it.
Okay.
So we did a public notice, so we're done as well there. So
okay,
everything meets the checklist as we see it, and she can answer any, or the two of them can answer any questions you might have. But this does not need to go to council. This would be administratively approved, assuming your concurrence.
Okay. Do you have any comments or? Pardon?
Do you have any questions?
Oh, I don't have any questions. Do you?
No, I did, but it's been answered. So the one about the neighbors signing off, I'm all good. Yeah,
they were all for it.
Perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, the residents were 9464 Henderson and 9468 Henderson. Both have signed, and we have a copy of their letter, should you be so inclined to see it.
Okay, do we concur?
We concur.
Okay, good to go.
So you'll receive a letter from us notifying you that it's been approved administratively. So Ray, we'll get you something, and you're good to go.
Okay,
we'll get that out probably at the end of the week. You'll see it.
Okay. That's
it. Thank you so much. Enjoy. It looks like it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, we waited a long time.
Yeah.
So it will be.
Yeah, our sons played Little League together.
Oh,
maybe
okay.
I should have recused myself, but
yes,
it's been a few years, I guess we're safe.
How long back we go, right? We're all in a nice little city.
Thank you.
Okay,
enjoy
good
the
luck.
Your week.
Okay, the next item is item B, future city council items.
Yeah, this is a balanced energy resolution that has been brought to us. A number of cities, city managers have brought it, and we've discussed it. We're bringing it forward. It supports a diverse energy portfolio type of thing where preserves local choice, and we have a representative from SoCal Gas to speak to it, and she'll give you more information than I could possibly give you.
Probably too much. Thank you, Steve. Emily Grant with SoCal Gas, thanks for having me here today. I know Councilman Calicott's very aware of what's going on at the state level, and I came in, I want to say before you were on council, Councilwoman Miles, to provide a brief update on what's going on at the state. But in short, there was a big push legislatively in 2018 for the state to go 100% electric. It didn't really take legislatively, so what happened is they watered down the bills. They turned those bills into study bills and sent them over to the Public Utilities Commission and the California Energy Commission and said, study the best way for us to reduce greenhouse gases. We ended up moving from an opposed position to a support position because we obviously also are always looking to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Unfortunately, over on the regulatory side, it seems as though the only solutions they can come up with are 100% electrification. So what they're going to do is continue. We've seen several movements that they're just chipping away, sort of messing with the market and with building codes to make. For example, they took away any sort of consideration for cost when deciding what incentives they were going to offer to Californians who got a new appliance, said, hey, I'd like to apply for a rebate because I picked an energy efficient piece of equipment. They have now stripped away considering cost from that.
So they're doing tiny little things to, again, just kind of, they've messed with some building codes. And you'll also see, too, you'll see cities at the city level, like Berkeley has decided to adopt an anti-natural gas 100% electrification for all new builds, residential and commercial. Obviously, SoCalGas has significant concerns with this. Our biggest concerns are affordability, reliability, lack of storage, and also lack of customer choice as well. And this is where we think the city needs to be pretty concerned, not only as your own local government, but also for your residents. So, of course, with higher bills, we see our electric utility companies, they're hardening their systems for wildfires. We don't know what that's going to cost yet, and that cost will go back down onto the ratepayers. And I know Councilman Kellicott sort of pressured one of the Edison reps to see if she could provide any sort of number, and they have no idea. And, of course, basic economics, if you only have one choice, prices are going to go right on up. A less reliable system. How many of you have had a power outage, right? Mm-hmm. We're having them all the time now. I've never had a natural gas outage. I don't know if you have. But that's because it's very reliable. So it's the backbone, as I'm sure you know, to our energy system. So when the renewables can't do their jobs because there's no sun or wind, natural gas is what's generating the electricity and keeping the grid solid. Storage and methane capture is really big for us as well. So the ag industry is what contributes to about 80% of our methane emissions. SoCalGas is very aggressively working on capturing that methane. So not only are we making sure it doesn't go to our system, but we're also putting in an energy source in our pipeline that's renewable and it's not based on fossil fuels. So we have made a commitment that we'll have 20% of that type of renewable energy in our pipeline by 2030. And last, of course, we just believe in customer choice. We think residents and businesses know what is best for their homes and for their businesses. So with that, we would support this committee putting the balanced energy resolution onto the next council agenda. We have 100, and I think we're up to 106 now this week statewide, and we have about 10 in Orange County who have all cities who have adopted balanced energy resolutions. And I'm happy to take any questions. I know I probably threw quite a bit.
So one of the things you shared with me is what would be the average cost of full electrification by household?
Thank you. So our estimates say it's about $7,000 per average household. So for businesses, obviously, or for a bigger home, that would be far greater. What we see happening, if I was a betting woman, the way I see this playing out is you have a gas water heater, it breaks down, you go to Home Depot to buy one. The regulatory side has messed with the market so much, they just don't sell them in the state of California anymore because it no longer makes sense for that manufacturer to bring it to Home Depot. It's just too difficult. So you're forced to buy a tankless or an electric water heater. You go home to install it, well, okay, now you've got an infrastructure problem because it doesn't support what's coming out of the wall, doesn't support that electric water heater. So you've got to pay for that. So not only are you forced to buy a more expensive appliance, you're going to be forced to update the infrastructure in your home to suit that piece of equipment. And then also, I think a lot of homes are only capable of so much. I think you're going to have to upgrade your panels and your boxes as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably about what we're looking at.
Yeah, I first became aware of this at the ACCOC, Energy and Environment Committee meeting, I think it was a couple months ago. And there was a presentation by representatives from Southern California Edison. And she touted all the wonderful things about how clean electric energy is and how they're going to all these renewables and so forth. And I kept asking the impertinent questions of, well, how much does all this cost? And she was extreme in her evasion. And of course, I like to cook with gas myself, and I gas is, for most of us, the cheapest source of, heating, and also for heating our water, as well as cooking and heating our pools if we do that. One of the things that really caught my attention in the Southern California Edison's representative's presentation was that they're pushing for a subsidy where funded by use of gas. So if you have for the amount of gas that you use, you pay a surcharge to support reducing the cost of electric energy. So yeah. It didn't seem very, that doesn't play fair. So.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, is that still in play, that concept?
Oh, yeah, we've been fighting on that one for a long time. And there's also, too, a little bit of a battle between North and South on that, because all that money goes into the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, and then you can apply, projects can apply for grants, local governments or nonprofits or whoever, from that Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. But all of the contingencies that they put on being able to qualify does not support Southern California infrastructure. So it's basically all public transit, all electrification. So all of our money that we all pay into that fund, and SoCalGas users, like you said, are the biggest supporters paid into that Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, are funding green projects in Northern California.
Just a forewarning, and having talked to beforehand, Edison may in fact show up at the meeting, at the council meeting, and object and speak to the objection, their objection. That has been what's happened elsewhere in the county.
Yeah, so their kind of general issue with it, and I don't want to speak for them, I'm a little uncomfortable doing that, but what they tend to say is they don't like the use of the word mandate in the resolution, because they feel as though we're being dishonest with the language. And again, this is yours to adopt. You guys are the owners of it. But their issue with it would be that there is no current mandate, so you shouldn't use that word. We would say, but they're trying to mandate it. We're just talking about the arbitrary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're not pointing to anything specific. So if you're uncomfortable with that word, take it. You know, there are a couple cities that we would say, take it out.
I don't know that we have it in, actually.
Yeah, I'm looking for it, too.
It's usually right in the beginning. I have.
I think we, by mandating technologies to power about the second. Whereas,
but that's what the representative was talking about at the ACCOC, was that you'd be mandated to.
So some cities have amended it to remove that word mandating by replacing requiring technologies. But anyway, so it's in there. It's just as a FYI. So when it comes to council, you're prepared to deal with.
Yeah,
I could put require or mandate. There you go.
Requiring is mandating. It's not. It's a semantic difference.
Yeah.
But
well, you can just put require or mandate.
But I do want to give you a heads up on that. For some councils, it's awkward to have the utility companies kind of up against each other. I don't think that we see ourselves as up against them, because this resolution includes electricity. They're our biggest customer. I love Edison. I love electricity. I definitely want it in my energy portfolio, but I want gas too.
Yeah.
And that's what the resolution is saying.
Yeah, I think anybody that's ever cooked with electric.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, restaurants really don't like it.
So this is a really, from our perspective, SAS perspective, we see it as a local choice issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not eliminating either option, it's supporting the maintenance of options.
Yeah, and if you want to electrify your house, you're welcome to.
Yeah, you can do it now. So.
But what happens, I agree with you, but just thinking down the road, what happens if going forward, it does become more difficult for those homes to
But that's a market issue. That's a market issue as opposed to a mandated issue from the...
That's scary.
You run over to Nevada and buy...
But that may very well happen. The market may be driven regulatory-wise. That may happen.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily an if, but when. I really do think that. I used to work for the legislature, so I know how fast they don't think and act.
But I think that to the extent that there are more cities that adopt these resolutions, you have a stronger voice saying don't do it.
Yeah. And so that's ultimately what we're going to do. Like I said, we have 106 statewide, which is almost 25% now. We have almost a quarter of the state. Our service territory is 200-plus cities, so we're well on our way to almost half of our service territory. I think the delay is there are only so many me's out. I've got 11, 12 cities, and so we're working as fast as we can to communicate the message. But ultimately, we're going to package them up, hand them over to the legislature, hand them to the governor, and say, hey, we've got support on this issue. Local government does not want to see.
Are you going to be present during the November?
Yeah, okay. Definitely.
And I expect Edison to be here too.
Yeah.
They'll see in the agenda. They watch our agenda.
And so I've seen several different avenues that this goes. So typically they'll get up during public comment. They usually just read a prepared statement. At that point, sometimes they sit down, it doesn't get pulled, and we all move on. Sometimes it does get pulled. There's a discussion about it. I will be there to answer questions, that kind of thing, and then it goes off. Sometimes it gets pulled, and then we bring it back to committee and have a further discussion with Edison here.
But you're free to amend on the floor if you wanted to take out the word mandated at the council meeting. You certainly have that ability to do so and still adopt
the
resolution.
It doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I don't think it's offensive anyway. I think it's a choice issue here.
Obviously, they've got a lot to gain by the state going completely electric, but we would argue this includes them and they should be supportive of it. San Diego Gas and Electric is supportive of the balanced energy resolution.
What about, was it Pacific Gas Electric, PG&E?
You know, I don't know that we've come to them as allies trying to get their support on this. I think we separate from them as much as we can.
Now, ultimately, yeah, most of our power, whether it's direct natural gas or electric, is from natural gas. If you look at all the power plants around us, the Huntington Beach plant, the LADWP, and AES plants in Los Alamitos, Seal Beach area. I worked, one of my major projects as a consultant was helping Edison build the Mountain View Generating Station out by Redlands. It's a huge plant, and they're all fired up with natural gas. And the thing is you can bring natural gas online right now. And those plants generally run most of the time. So it's, you're still buying gas indirectly. So.
Isn't it, yeah, for the Teslas and stuff, don't they have to, even though you're plugging in the electricity, isn't it all powered by natural gas?
Most of it still, yeah. So yeah. I think that the governor's last proclamation was 100% renewable sources for electric generation by 2045. So that's the goal. And so they will be having to meet that one way or another. We don't completely see how. Here's the other thing, though, too, that they don't consider is you're cutting out a lot of up-and-coming technologies when you say all electric. So one of them, for example, is called power to gas. So I talked a little bit about how natural gas is such a great commodity because it's a physical thing. You can store it. Right now, the state of California generates too much electricity from solar and wind during the peak times. So we pay other states to take it. We pay them to take our excess off the grid because the grid would go berserk if all that was on it during peak times. So we've got to get rid of it. So we pay Arizona to take it. Other options, what you could do if the state was a little bit more open to anything other than all electric, is a technology called power to gas. So you can convert that excess energy from the grid into hydrogen and store it in our pipelines. So those are some things that I think are going to be up and coming, and that would be considered, or should be considered, it's not right now by the state, renewable technology.
Okay.
Well, it's up to you if you want it on the agenda.
Would you like to add it to the agenda for the council to consider?
Well, wouldn't it just go under consent? Or no?
Yeah. It would consent. I would put it in consent.
So you support
it? But I mean, obviously,
yeah,
so I would do it with your work.
Yeah, the committee will support.
Okay.
All right. On the agenda.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you for coming today.
Oh, no, my pleasure. Happy to be here.
And you'll be here.
Yes, for sure. I think I'm going to send my family over to Rockwell's for dinner. Come on here and then go meet them. So we try to make these things fun when we.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So now we'll move on to information items. Item A is monthly update status of significant development projects.
Yeah, Bill, on all three of those issues, Bill got called out of town. He had a close friend pass away, and he had to go take care of the friend passed away, so he went and helped deal with the wife. Mm-hmm. So he left, and his reports are typically the first. So he last Wednesday he left town and said, "I got to go. I apologize."
Yeah.
And he said, "I said, well, so we'll have him to you once he gets back Wednesday. We'll get you the reports." But he just apologized. It's one of those things where it was unplanned, and you have to deal with it. So he and Pat left Wednesday afternoon. So we don't have it. I can update you. I got a call from Councilman. Colicott yesterday, he's the one that actually brought the attention of what was going on Bryn Mawr, the filming. The permits in the past and what they have here, we've only had three permits in 12 years, so it's not a very common situation.
Permits for filming?
For filming. And those permits, they did not advise us of the type of filming they were going to do, or there was never any approval about closing streets, never any approval granted about any sort of fake guns or police or any of those types of things. That being said, the sheriff went over there after I was contacted, and they shut down filming shortly. We're going to revise that. It shows us a glaring weakness in our film permitting process, and we're going to deal with it. A number of the residents have called me this morning and talked to me about it. They were appreciative that we're going to get on it, and they were appreciative the deputy showed up last night and restored order, if you will. But they put porta-potties on the street, which were unauthorized. They just took over. They shut down the street, effectively, without any sort of coordination or whatever. In the event that there had been an emergency for fire or for sheriff, medical emergency, it would have been problematic. You can't just put porta-potties where you want to. I mean, you just can't do that. They know better. In talking to the company, it's a film school in LA. The reason they had to come out here is they said that we were the easiest city to approve it. Well, that is ending. We're not going to let that. But it was some of those things that we don't have it. There is a filming, for instance, there's a filming going on. A Chapman student is filming at his own home right over here on the 9th, Saturday. But all they're doing is filming the front driveway, but they just want to let everyone know there'll be cameras out front of their own driveway, so they got a filming. That's the typical of what we get here. We don't get big old productions and whatnot going on. So this was clearly a situation where our policies were just not in tune with what was going on out there, and we didn't ask and they didn't tell. They knew what was going on, and they knew better, and we didn't know enough to ask. So we never had that kind of situation where they've shut down a street and took over. So just so you know, we'll be coming to the full council with a amended policy and process for the approvals in the future, which will include resident notification in advance, all those kinds of things that we should have had this time around. The sheriff was actually concerned because you have fake guns out there. In the event that fake guns were there and one of their officers had actually responded to a resident call thinking there might, you could have had an officer-involved shooting. You can imagine it without any sort of, it's not even a far-fetched problem. It's a very real problem.
100%, yeah.
And especially in the evening night hours when they were doing it, it's like, whoa, time out. That's just a bad judgment on all sides, and there was no clearance involved at ever. So anyway, like I say, the deputy shut it down, and we'll be coming back. So I just want to give you an update, and I thank the councilman for getting a hold of me right away.
Well, thank you for answering and getting right back to me and dealing with it quickly. It was unbelievable what I heard over the phone from the Fred Whitaker Sr. His wife called me to let me know that I guess Fred Alexander, this was going on right in front of his house. And
Mrs. Christensen called, and I had a call from her, and we had calls here in the office today of some of the residents. I mean, they were concerned, rightfully so. You don't see people lying in the street like they're dead and shot. I mean, it was like sort of bad judgment. But anyway, that's a first.
Thanks for helping out with that.
Yeah, that's a first. I'm used to in the county, the companies know they have security guards present when you do anything in the county for filming. They have notification requirements. They have hours of operation. I mean, they have all sorts of requirements. You know, they have to have service trailers, and they can't park them certain locations. It's all sorts of restrictions, and these companies know that. The school knew that. The LA school knew it. They just sort of took advantage of a situation here. So our lesson learned, and we can't apologize to the residents, but I made a point of letting them know that their inconveniences were noted, and we certainly will correct in the future. So that's sort of an update, if you will, on a code enforcement issue,
Okay. Right. Well, anything going on with the street maintenance projects?
Yeah, we'll be updating you on that Wednesday at the infrastructure management with the street maintenance, which is out for RFP, and we'll be talking about slurry seal project, and we'll be talking about the striping and painting issues. Uh-huh. So those are all on the agenda for Wednesday morning.
Oh, good. So we're going to be hearing about how you're going to fix that sinkhole at the corner of Center and Valley.
That's actually out, but that's out for bid right now, that whole project.
When I first got my Harley, I was going around that corner. It was it's pitch black up there. And I was going around the corner, and boom, almost threw me off. But yeah, it's a mess. It's, I don't know when they put that in, but that street wasn't always there. They didn't always have that connector across. That's a more, one of the city's more recent additions. Yeah. And I think they kind of did it on a shoestring and cut a lot of corners. Working with staff, and they're addressing a lot of it. In fact, there's, if you go down, if you go around the corner and you go up kind of to the crown of Valley before it goes down to Lemon, you'll notice that there's a really steep bank, and it goes right down into some guy's backyard. The street itself is probably at his roof height. And the only thing separating the traffic from his backyard fence is a 6-inch asphalt curb. And that's a safety issue, and we've talked with Steve about it, and it looks like, you know, we're going to try to find a way to address some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anything else?
No, sir.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Since, are there any other items or anything you'd like to bring up at our next meeting?
No, not this time.
I do have one item. We did have a report from our, housing element consultant, John Douglas, mm-hmm. on the impact of some of this recent legislation dealing with accessory dwelling units. I'm on the ACCOC Housing Committee. We received an excellent update from them a couple weeks previous to that. And I understand that Rattan and Tucker might also have put together a summary because they support a lot of cities, and of course this is a major issue affecting cities. I'd like to suggest that maybe we work together with city staff and our consultant in Rattan and Tucker, and maybe we could work collectively together and put together a kind of an information sheet that we could post on our website and also share with the Sentry. Maybe they would like to share, because it has general applicability throughout mm-hmm. California, about what this is all about.
What it means.
Yeah, because I think our residents are going to be blindsided when they start seeing things happening. When they start seeing two accessory dwelling units and you don't have to provide any parking, you can convert a garage without replacement, and you don't have to provide parking if you're within half a mile of a bus stop. I mean,
so we actually have, on the 26th, you'll have a matrix compares our current ordinances to what has to be amended as a result of that. So as a follow-up to our last meeting. So this coming council meeting, that matrix will be, it's being reviewed by Rattan and Tucker right now. We worked with John Douglas on it as well. So that matrix compares new state law, our current ordinances, obviously the changes, you can see the changes in item by item. Yeah. So you'll be seeing that coming forward as an informational item that we can start sharing with everybody. But I think to get it out to the public, get it out to the council and the public very quickly, that's our intent.
Yeah, I guess what I was envisioning is just a simple narrative, you know, that we could share, and that, you know, again, could be we could post on our website and maybe share with the Sentry, and hopefully they would publish it. Because, you know, people in Orange Park Acres and everywhere else that the Sentry covers will be impacted by this, and it really undermines what our community is certainly all about. We're all about low density development in quiet communities, and this state law supersedes all that and blows it out of the water. So it's I think it's, you know, as a city, and as, you know, the elected leaders, you know, we're kind of the eyes and ears for residents, let them know, hey, this is coming down. There's nothing we can do about it, but it's out there. And
we're elected new governor and then change the law.
Well, okay. Right. So,
okay. We'll just, great.
Okay, thank you. Well, with that, we're adjourned.